This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 259 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. This is a practical show done by a practical guy, and that's me. Well, going to kind of talk about a mixed bag of things in this episode. I'm kind of doing this episode in pieces. This is the first piece. I think I have an interview coming up shortly, but if that interview doesn't work out, I've got some more material planned. So again, I'm kind of recording this in a few different time frames, so to speak. But I think it'll all be put together in an excellent message. So I want to talk about a voicemail that came in recently, and let me just go ahead and play it for you, and then I've got some comments.
Hi, Bob. This is Dan Vamos. I just wanted to say thank you to all the listeners who are calling and asking about and following up on my little Glock incident I had. Remember that my wife was shooting and a casing got behind her safety glasses and burned her around the eye. Well, one listener I called in and voicemailed you and asked if she was wearing a hat. She was not. And I could not get her to wear a hat. She wore her safety glasses, but as women are tend to be fashion conscious, she was not so inclined. So she did not listen to her lovely and loving husband. With that being said, I changed the extractor on it. I went with a Lone Wolf, and I went ahead and changed that, and it works, and it works fine. The problem being, I was really put off with Glock's handling of my customer service. My problems, not wanting to receive the gun, and making it pretty much my problem, and so I sold the gun. I put a local ad in the paper, and a Armed Forces airman, actually, who's active duty. I sold the gun to him, and I gave him a really fair price, and I'm happy to pass that on to someone to enjoy. I just was bitter by the whole experience with the Glock and their lack of customer service, and they lost a customer for life. And while it is a great gun, I'm sure, I was no longer comfortable with it or that the company stood behind their product, so I've moved on. I am now a 1911 user and supporter, and I've had a lot more accurate range visits with my 1911s than I have had with Glock. And so I'm moving on. But I just wanted to thank everyone for their questions and whatnot about, you know, my incident with the Glock 17. And so I made sure everything was workable. I removed the old extractor, and it was kicking brass fine after that. But in the end, I decided to move on and put Glock in my rearview mirror. And there are a lot of great guns out there, and there are a lot of great Glocks for people that want them. I'm just not one of those people. Anyway, Bob, thanks for the show. I wanted to say hi to them and to all your listeners and thank them for their concern about my situation. Bye.
Well, Dan, I think you just did tell everybody thank you for their concern. And, you know, the listeners in this show are a very helpful group, and I think that that's great. That's one of the reasons why I love doing this, is because it seems like everybody who listens to my show really likes to reach out and help other people who are other listeners and other people in the gun community. Dan, I'm sorry that you had bad customer service through from Glock. Try not to let that turn you off of Glock's for life. I know you mentioned that. Try not to do that. Keep an open mind. You never know. Glock might come out with something excellent later on down the road that you want to buy. And I try not to do that. You know, sometimes I get bad service. I understand that. But just because maybe one agent in a company didn't provide good service, it's not always a good reason to discount everything that the company sells or does. I've made that mistake before, and I've missed out on some really good products that other companies have offered. And I'm not just talking about guns. I'm talking about other things, too. I've missed out because I got soured because of one person. How many of you can kind of relate to that? Just be careful, Dan, because like I said, you know, maybe Glock might come out with something down the road that you really, really want and really enjoy. Now, enjoy your 1911. That's great. Dan, train with that 1911, please. Please train with that 1911. It's often considered an expert's gun. So be an expert with that gun and train with it and learn to use it well. So, Dan, thanks again for the voicemail. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the show. And Dan's a podcaster, too, the Homestead Dividends podcast. You might want to listen to his podcast from time to time. I think it's a great show. And, you know, he's been interviewed on my survival show a couple of different times. And so I think he deserves a listen. But thanks for that voicemail. All right, let's go to the next voicemail.
Hey, Bob. This is Damien from Dallas. Just got done listening to episode 256, another great podcast, and appreciate everything you're doing. I did want to mention on the moving target I called in on the voicemail. I did not think about that, but you made such a good point that when you say the importance of moving off the X, my goodness, after looking at the videos that we did, now we purposely did not move because the purpose of the drill was to show you how fast someone can close in on you, but I never really thought about the important lesson that it also teaches on moving off the X until you mentioned it. That is absolutely brilliant way of looking at it, because when you do that type of drill, not only do you learn how fast someone can close the gap, but you also learn the importance of why you should be moving at the same time. Now you got me thinking, how can we incorporate that drill and have the target come at you and have you move and have the target follow you? So now that's an engineering challenge. We'll have to figure that one out. But I did want to mention that in any way that you can train to simulate the response time versus how much an enemy can close in on you, it's always a great thing. The cool thing about the moving target that when I remember every time I drew, as I started drawing my weapon on this target closing in on me at high speed, it plays with your brain too, because you're not shooting a stationary target in the sense that it's getting bigger and bigger, but it plays a trick on your eyes. I found that my focus was the face of this target. This target had a human, human body with eyeballs and all that. And it was just natural for me to focus on the face, but I had to train myself to shoot center mass, especially because it's coming at me so fast. But the natural reaction of my brain when you see this target coming at you is that your eyes focus on the face. Now, that could be different for different people, but I noticed that was true for me. So having the target moving at you does add another element for you to think about. But again, any which way you can pull it off to, bring that point home and training is always valuable. But man, I've discussed this drill with a lot of people here that I train with and do things with, and I never once thought about the secondary lesson of this is why you need to move off the X. We always teach and we always talk about moving off the X. I learned that in close range gunfighting with you and John Payne, but I've never really added that as one of the things they're learning from that drill. And you're absolutely right. So thanks for for mentioning that, because it just reminds me that that's a great book also.
You see, Damien's voicemail here reminds me to remind you why it's very important to repeat training courses that you've already taken once in a while. Repetition is the mother of learning. Damien learned that in close range gunfighting. He learned the importance of moving off the X when you've got an attacker coming at you, but sometimes kind of forgets about that when doing drills. And see, this is why repetition is the mother of learning. And, this might be a foreign concept to some of you. And I've had actually people criticize me for saying that you should repeat courses. If you want to get really, really good at something, they say repetition, repetition, repetition. That's the key. What do you hear people say so much in the gun community? They talk about muscle memory, right? They talk about consistency and simplicity. Gabe Suarez just recently wrote an excellent post about simplicity. I'll put a link to that post. It's on Warrior Talk on the forum, by the way. And simplicity, muscle memory, things like that. Well, all of that, you know, the muscle memory comes from repetition. Okay. What do you hear people say? Same gun, same place every time. Practice, practice, practice. Well, that's repetition. And so, Damon, yeah, build that moving off the X. Build that into your training regimen. Now, your idea about the moving target's great. So that's excellent. And I think I'm going to try to figure out how to build one of those. I might even get together with Ben Branham and we'll figure out how to maybe try to build one of those if we can or something. I mean, that would be just so cool to be able to have that, what you've got there, to be able to train. As I've mentioned before, shooting at moving targets is not easy. But think about a real fight, folks. I want you to think about something for a minute. If you're attacked, do you really want to just stay there in one place, or do you want to try to move out of the way? Especially if they've got a knife or a gun. Now, this is not an absolute. There might be times where staying where you are might be a good idea. But if it's not, if you've got to move, can you fight on the move? That's what training courses that teach moving off the X is all about. In April, by the way, I'm teaching CRG 2 with Suarez International. That's Close Range Gunfighting 2. Guess what? It's changed. We're going to be teaching, or I will be teaching, some point shooting combined with the close range gunfighting curriculum. So that's an excellent 2-day class I'm doing April 4th and 5th in San Antonio. April 5 and 6, Saturday and Sunday, April 5 and 6, 2014 in San Antonio. So in the show notes, I'm going to put a link. If you're interested, you can save $100 if you sign up now. If you're planning your training for next year, if you want to come train with me in the new formatted close range gunfighting, April 5th and 6th in San Antonio, you could save $100 right now if you sign up before the end of 2013, before the end of the year. So go to the show notes at handgunworld.com. There will be a direct registration link right there for this episode, episode 259. But anyway, Damien's point's really good because you got to put that in. And this is where, I don't know, how many of you train in this stuff? I know some of you listening to this train because you've trained with me or Ben, and I know that you guys are taking other courses out there too, because some of you send me emails and voicemails and you tell me about them. But if you're not, if you're a stand and deliver shooter, if you're someone that's all you've ever done is just stand there in one spot and shoot, you might want to think about getting some instruction in moving, because what are you going to do if you haven't gone through the repetition of learning how to draw, how to move first, then draw, and then fire, and make hits? And it's very possible. People do it all the time. I've had people come to my classes that say, Bob, you know, I've never done this before. But by the end of that second day, or even by the end of the first day, they're doing it, and they're doing it well. It's amazing. The human mind and human body is capable of great things if you teach it. So that's what I want to say about that. Thanks, Damien. Excellent voicemail. All right, just a quick break, and we'll move on to the next segment. All right, the next thing I want to cover is an email that I got from Paul in Illinois. Let me just share this. I'm going to paraphrase it with you, but Paul says he's a certified instructor for the new Illinois Concealed Carry. Hey, that's great. I love it. It's just, you know what? That sounds so good to say, doesn't it? And some of you might be thinking, hey, that's good to hear. It's good to hear. Illinois Concealed Carry. I know. It's very restrictive, but it's still good to hear. Because, you know what? Who'd have thought several years ago? He said he's writing his own course material and student handbooks. And he wanted to let me know that he's including the Handgun World podcast as one of the other sources in the back of his student handout booklet, right alongside the NRA website and the Illinois State Police website and Gary Slider's handgunlaw.us site. If you recall, I had Gary Slider interview on this show several weeks back, the owner of the great website handgunlaw.us. Well, Paul, thank you. Wow, that's flattering. Thank you very much. He says he believes my podcast to be a valuable resource, not just for experienced shooters, but also new shooters. Here's something that I didn't know in Paul's email. He says, Illinois doesn't recognize concealed carry licenses from any other state. I didn't know that. I thought that they had some reciprocity, but guess not. He says, however, non-residents of Illinois can receive an Illinois concealed carry license or even become certified Illinois concealed carry instructors. That's weird. So they don't recognize CCL licenses from any other state, but a non-resident can receive an Illinois concealed carry license and even become a concealed carry instructor. He also says an NRA basic pistol instructor is qualified to become an Illinois CCL instructor. Hey, well, that means I could. I'm qualified because I'm an NRA basic pistol instructor. He says, if you or anyone at your gun club is interested in becoming an Illinois instructor, I'll be glad to help you get started. Interesting. So, if you guys want to become an Illinois concealed carry instructor, let me know, and I'll put you in touch with Paul from Illinois. Good email, Paul. Thank you. I didn't know. You taught me some stuff there. And that's kind of pretty cool. I didn't realize that a non-resident of Illinois could teach Illinois' concealed carry class. Sometimes these laws, man, they just don't make a lot of sense to me. You know, I don't get it. I don't get some of these. But you know what? Leave it to politicians and leave it to lawmakers to make laws that don't make sense. I mean, that's kind of like what they do, right? Isn't that right? Isn't that what they're supposed to do? You know, we elect them to be sensible, but then they get in office and they somehow lose their minds. Oh, well, that's the way it goes. But Paul, thank you very much for an excellent email. All right, let me introduce my guest coming up. Glenn Tate is the author of the best-selling book series, 299 Days. It's a series of prepper books, but he also talks a lot about guns. If you have not read Glenn Tate's book series, his book 7 is coming out shortly. If you haven't read the series, 299 Days, you really need to look into it. You can order it, by the way, off of my Amazon site, on my Amazon store at handgunworld.com. Christmas is right around the corner, folks. So if you want to buy some good Christmas gifts, if you want to buy Glenn's book as a Christmas gift for somebody, please go over to handgunworld.com. Use my Amazon store. Same Amazon pricing, same good deals, same shipping deals and things like that. Buying it through my store helps support the show. There are a lot of you doing it right now. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It's making a huge difference. Amazon gives me a little fee to help support the show. His book, 299 Days, I got to admit to you something, Glenn. I've only read 4 of them so far, but it's an easy read, and it's a really good read. So here we go. Let's bring on Glenn Tate. Well, my guest is Glenn Tate. Welcome back to the show, Glenn.
Thank you for having me. This is, what, 6th or 7th time on your show. I love coming on.
I think you're starting to earn the status of one of the most frequent guests on my show. I think you and John Hodaway and maybe John Payne, you guys might be the top 3.
That's some impressive company I've managed to weasel my way into, so that's kind of nice. I appreciate that.
Okay, you said weasel your way. Okay, I thought you were calling Hodaway a weasel. Maybe that's what you were doing. I don't know.
No, okay. Speaking of Hodaway, I'm going to be at the Masadayu Mag 40 group class in Conway, Arkansas, that Hideaway is involved with, and that's going to be in mid-May, I want to say the 16th through the 19th.
Awesome, you're going to love that.
Gonna meet him in person, and I think of myself as somewhat of a tough guy, and there's probably one guy on the planet who can make me cry. It's probably Hodaway. He'll just start insulting me and I'll start crying and it'll be ugly. But you know, that's part of the whole Hodaway experience.
It is. I've had the Hodaway experience a few times now, and you know, he didn't get me to tears, but I fire back. He knows. I like to kind of, you know, jab back. You're pretty good at that, Glenn. You should be able to, you know, exchange punches with Hodaway.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting. Either he's crying or I'm crying. We'll see who comes out of that match with or without tears.
And then Masada Yub's going to have to step in and be the referee.
Well, and Masad is going to be, I think, pretty cool to me because I'm a lawyer. And of course, the legal portion, the 20 portion of Mag 20, he's going to be saying, you know, isn't that right, counselor? And he's going to be, you know, saying, what was the holding in this case? And it's going to
you know, put me on my toes. But you know what? I mean, that's good mental preparation because I'm going to have my game on, or Masada will make me cry. So we don't want that.
Is it a Mag 20 or a Mag 40 class you're going to?
It's a Mag 40, and for the Mag 20 portion, I expect Masada Ayoub to be picking on any lawyers in the room. When it comes to the shooting portion of Mag 20, I'll just be another person out there, you know, shooting, so he won't have any real way to jab at me. Maybe he'll think of one, and I'm sure him and Hathaway will get together and brew up a pot of coffee and get a little bit jacked up on caffeine and come up with ways to try to make Glenn Tate cry, so it should be a good
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and say hi to Mass for me, and say hi to Hathaway and Chaz. I think I'm sure all three of those guys will be there.
That's right, and Chaz is sort of the sponsor of it there on Road Dinner Podcast, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, it is going to be cool. Say hi to those guys. And here's a quick shout-out because I know at least two out of the three are listening, so I think you'll have a great class. It's highly recommended. I've been to it twice. You know, the first time I was nothing but a student. The second time I helped out Hathaway a little bit on the line and sat through a lot of the class portion, and it's a great class. Everybody needs to take it.
That's what everybody says, and I was thrilled to be able to go, so I can't wait. It's marked on my calendar, literally.
Good. Good. All right. Well, we're going to talk about inexpensive revolvers, and I think this was your idea. Great topic. Let's talk a little bit about some of the. Let's start off with some brand names and things. What kind of inexpensive revolvers do you like, and why do you like them?
Well, I tolerate inexpensive revolvers. To be honest, I'm a Glock guy and a semi-automatic guy, but there are some out there that are okay, and they have a very specific purpose. And that is in a survival situation or just conditions are really, really crummy and there's tons of crime. I expect a lot of people like you and me and most of the listeners to the show will have neighbors and friends and family members coming up to them and saying, yeah, you're a gun guy or gun gal, right? And, you know, with all this crime that's going on and there are no police around because they can't afford gasoline for the patrol cars, I kind of need a gun and stuff, so you've, like, got some extra ones, right? And, of course, you know, now there's a legality involved. If you transfer firearms to other people, you need to follow laws and everything, and that's important. So setting aside the legal parts of this, let's say you're in a state like yours, Texas, or mine, where face-to-face transfers are legal, private sales are. I believe that's true in Texas. I'm pretty sure.
It is, yeah, it is true for now. Of course, I don't see Texas ever changing that unless the federal government tries to ram it down our throats. And even if they do that, I think Texas will put up a huge amount of resistance to that.
Well, yes, and there's a chapter in the forthcoming book 7, 299 days about Texas doing exactly that.
Good.
So I digress a bit. So that's the scenario. Things have broken down, and you out there as a listener, you've got your SIGs or your Glocks or your Smith & Wessons or your Rugers or the regular kind of guns that, you know, we all typically use. And typically they're semi-automatics, no disrespect to revolvers. So this isn't about that topic. You're squared away with your own guns that you like. I think it would be a great idea, and I've actually done this myself, to have at least one, maybe a few, inexpensive revolvers on hand to give out to people who need them. These are obviously people you trust and everything, because I think there'll be a great need for them. And the idea hit me in two parts. The first part was, before I was even thinking about the prepping component of this, I was at the range, and there was this older guy there, nice guy, we would always talk, and he always had a bunch of different kind of cheap revolvers. I'm going to say inexpensive. I'm not going to say cheap. These aren't Saturday Night Specials, you know, that are made out of pot metal that, you know, fall apart after you fire them four times or something like that. So not that. And he had these revolvers, and I'd ask him about it. Most of them were 38s. There were some 32s, various kinds of 32s in there. And but they were almost entirely 38s. And he'd say, yeah, I got this at a pawn shop, or there was an estate sale, and, you know, somebody died, and their widow sold, you know, some revolvers, and they were nothing special guns. You asked about brand names. There were some, I don't know, like some guns I never even heard of. I want to say like H&R, and if I'm getting these names wrong, I apologize, but this is off the top of my head from several years ago.
Yeah.
Iverson, something like that. I think there was even, I want to say a Sears. I know it wasn't like Sears branded, but it was sold and sort of made, not made by Sears, but it was marketed by Sears. Coast to Coast Hardware, I seem to remember. I don't know if I'm even getting this right, but you get the idea. And then there were some others, Charter Arms, which currently makes quite a few revolvers. And so there were revolvers like this, nothing that, you know, I would write home about, to be honest. I'm sure they're all fine guns. They function well because this older gentleman would fix them up. He would buy them or sometimes just get them for free from people who didn't want them. Let's say it's a gummed up, you know, 32, you know, special or something, or some, you know, some old gun like that. He would take them apart and clean them up, and then he had these inexpensive pistols, and it was sort of a hobby for him. So I tucked that away in my mind, and I said to myself, well, not everything needs to be the kind of gun that I'm used to shooting. There's a whole different world out there of inexpensive revolvers, and I sort of tucked that away. And then when the prepping stuff was going on in my mind, I thought, boy, a lot of people are going to be asking me for guns, and I'm not going to hand them my Glock 17 with my Surefire X300 and the nice trigger job. I'm not,
yeah.
Even that one. And, you know, as I sit here and say give it up, I guess there's a third use for inexpensive revolvers, and that would be if there was a gun confiscation of some kind, and I don't think that's likely as a practical matter in many parts of the country. We can talk about that later, but, I mean, I don't want to alarm people and anything. But, I mean, if there were a gun confiscation of some kind, and the unlikely event that the police are going door-to-door and getting guns, you could hand over one of these, you know, Coast to Coast Hardware 38 specials or something like that and say, here you go, this is my gun. Maybe, you know, you need to turn in a gun in order to, I don't know, get the privilege of having electricity and water still running or something like that. That's possible. So they could be little cheap giveaway guns, stocking stuffers, if you will. right? It's that time of year.
It's that time of year, yeah.
So there would be all kinds of uses for them. And so I thought about it, and I'm not a revolver expert. I don't shoot them that much. I have a fantastic Smith & Wesson Model 63 22 long rifle pistol that I love. It's got the smoothest action and trigger in the world. I have a Taurus Model 85 with a red dot, or with a Crimson Trace, I should say, Crimson Trace grip.
Right.
It's my wife's gun. She doesn't know about it. She's never seen it before, but it will be her gun because it's, you know, and no disrespect to females, but with the smaller hands, and my wife has no interest in shooting and never going to practice. I think something that's easy to load, easy to shoot, especially with that Crimson Trace dot, would be just perfect for her for self-defense gun. It's got a barrel that's, I want to say, 2.5, perhaps 3 inches long, and so it's concealable. And it's fine. You know, some Tauruses I've seen, the minority of them have some problems, some cylinder lockups and things like that. But the one I have is fantastic and smooth and great and works just fine. So those are my thoughts on inexpensive revolvers for a very, very unique role that they would be serving. And they're kind of fun, too. I mean, it's nice to have a pistol you can knock around. You know, you can throw in your fishing gear or something. I mean, out here, where I am, sometimes, you know, in the backwoods of Washington State, not all fishermen are nice, and it's nice to have a little something with you that maybe you're not going to be worried. I mean, it's going to be around water, perhaps salt water. If it gets a little rusty, you really don't care. I mean, a knock around with what we've called truck guns, but I guess it would only be limited to a truck. So, yeah, those are some ideas about something that maybe a lot of listeners hadn't thought about before, which is just inexpensive revolvers.
Yeah, let me say some things about inexpensive revolvers, Glenn. I want to throw my two cents in here. Be careful, anybody listening to this, be careful about getting an inexpensive revolver and giving that to, like, a woman who doesn't shoot much and say, oh, that'd be a perfect gun for her. Most snub-nosed revolvers are very difficult to shoot. Most of them are hard to be accurate with, and they kick a lot. And a lot of women who have never shot much. Sometimes they fire five rounds out of one of those and they say, I don't like it and I don't want to shoot it again. So be careful about that. But,
oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
But having said that, well, as a matter of fact, for new shooters, I like to put something like a Glock 19 or a M&P 9mm or a Springfield XD M9 because, you know, those have friendly grips and things like that. But since we're on inexpensive revolver topic, I see some distinct advantages in an inexpensive revolver for, like you said, being able to hand it off to somebody. And look, if the gun gets lost or stolen or abused, what are you out? $150-$200 on a used revolver?
Yep.
I mean, that's it. The thing I like is you can get used revolvers in real good shape for very little money.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few at pawn shops. I've only looked a few times, and I looked, by the way, after the most recent ammo and gun scare, and they were scarce, so they're not always out there. I imagine they might be more common now, but they're one of those things that quite a few people have that are not gun people, and they get circulated around. I mean, people buy them and sell them, and, you know, people die. As I mentioned, often there's the guy who dies and the widow is getting rid of the guns. I've looked a little bit on GunBroker, and you can find some things on there, at least to get an idea about prices and things. I don't know that, I mean, GunBroker would certainly work for that, but I'm thinking more about, as I say, pawn shops and estate sales. And sometimes gun stores will be great because people will, if you know the folks at a gun store, and of course you've read many of the books in the series, and you know about Capital City Guns, and a cool gun store is a great thing, right? It's depicted in the book.
Of course.
But gun store folks, you know, if you say, listen, I've done this too. I am looking for inexpensive revolvers, prefer 38 specials. If you get any, you know, just kind of let me know. And they're sometimes traded in, so you can sometimes find them there. It takes a little bit more looking to find one than, say, you know, a Glock 19, as you mentioned. So they're out there, and the price is right. And by the way, I mean, I mentioned, you know, a 32 something or other, and I guess you could do that if you got a smoking good deal and you knew you could get several boxes of ammunition. But I'm a big fan of 38 Special just because it's incredibly common. And if this is a prepping use, you're putting this inexpensive revolver to, you always have to think about ammunition, so 38 Special is probably a good choice with that. I mean, 357 would be better, but if it's a 357, it's probably not in the inexpensive revolver category. And don't forget 22s. I can't believe I forgot 22s. I know somebody, well, actually several thousand people are saying, oh my goodness, you're not suggesting 22 caliber for self-defense. No, I'm not. I'm saying it could be a pretty handy thing if you have to hand it out, and if it's a gift, you know, again, the single mom down the street sort of thing. And no, it's not ideal. Ammunition is relatively plentiful, and 22 revolvers, especially, I don't know, off-brand ones, I guess that's what you would call them, are pretty common and pretty darn inexpensive. So don't forget the 22 revolvers. They're better than nothing.
Yeah, they are, and you know what? Ruger makes a nice LCR 22 Magnum revolver too, which, you know, is that the best thing you can use for self-defense? I would say no, but hey, 22 Magnum revolver, if that's all you got in your hand, or even just a 22, you know, it's better than trying to beat them off with a baseball bat, probably.
I love the LCR's trigger, by the way. It's amazing. It's like this reversing cam or some crazy thing that is just really, really awesome to shoot. You know, 22s and 22 Magnums are also important for another, I think, often forgotten group of people, and that would be especially older people that might have arthritis.
Exactly.
And, might have, yeah, trouble, you know, gripping or the recoil is just not feasible for them. And, you know, don't forget those folks. I mean, they're obviously entitled to defend themselves too. I mean, it's not your obligation to supply them with a firearm, but I mean, you know, they have needs too. And 22 just might do the trick. And again, it's It's better than nothing, and it's a peace of mind thing too for those neighbors I'm thinking now of, it could really make a difference for them. I mean, they never need to draw it or let alone shoot it, and it just might be an enormous quality of life enhancement for folks. And you out there listening might be in a position to provide that for somebody, and good for you. That would be a very, very good thing to do.
Yeah, and you know, speaking along those lines of having to, you know, arm someone that's not a gun person, the nice thing about revolvers, I'll say some things about revolvers, some good things, is that they're so incredibly simple, they're so incredibly reliable. Virtually everybody knows how to shoot a revolver. Virtually everybody knows how to load a revolver because they've seen them loaded. You know, that they've seen them loaded on the movies, they've seen people load them. I mean, you know, really, how many people out there have not seen somebody load and shoot a revolver at some point in time? Everybody is so familiar with it, so they're just so simple, and they're such a point-and-shoot weapon that it doesn't take any brain power or technique to shoot a revolver.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because I had that experience this weekend. I took someone out to shoot, right, which is a good thing to do. The three teenage boys who are in a family, we have a friend of the family, and I took their boys out. And I started them off with 22 revolver, that Smith & Wesson Model 63 I mentioned, and showed them how to load and unload it. And they hadn't shot before, and they knew from movies, actually, exactly how to load and unload it, and I thought that was a really good thing. So that reinforced, that's actually one of the reasons I had this idea for this topic, was it reinforced with me that virtually anyone can pick up a revolver and they know how to use it, and that's really important because we're not talking about IDPA folks here.
Right. Now, I want to clarify something. You know, earlier I said anybody can pick it up and shoot it. And anybody can pick it up and shoot it, and that's true. Being good with it now is a whole different story, and it goes back to the point I said earlier. It's, with the exception of maybe a .22, most revolvers in .38 Special and .357 are pretty tough to shoot. Most of them have very long triggers that require a lot of manipulation to press the trigger smoothly and not jerk it. And, you know, most of them don't have very good sights. Most people are just not going to be, unless they train a lot, are not going to be, you know, stone cold accurate with these things. But in terms of bringing them into play, pressing the trigger, using it, pointing it at a bad guy 5 feet away, I think most people could do that with a revolver.
Yeah, and those are the sorts of distances I'm talking about. And I think about the news report from, I want to say, this summer, and I'm sure you've either heard about it or probably even talked about it. And it was the woman, I want to say in Texas, actually, her name was Georgia, who, you know, someone broke into her house and she had her kids, and her husband had shown her how to use a revolver. And she retreated, and which, you know, I don't think she should legally have to do, but she did it, and that was her choice. And so I think her and perhaps the kids were up in the attic. And the bad guy came through the door in the attic, and she shot 5 or 6 times, I can't remember how many it held, and hit him all but one time, so hit him 5 or 4 times, whichever it was, and he ended up running away and dying. I mean, he left, you know, so she stopped the bad guy, which is, of course, the whole goal of all this. And so that's the sort of use I'm thinking of, maybe not an attic, I guess cars and parking lots and that sort of thing are more likely, or the 5-foot distance when somebody, you know, breaks down the door and somebody's hiding in their bedroom and it's that sort of distance. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, and nothing fancy, nothing like the stuff you and I do on the weekends, not that kind of stuff.
No. And, you know, since this is about inexpensive revolvers, you mentioned Charter Arms. Those are some good ones to look at. Really, the Ruger series of revolvers, especially if you can find one used, those are pretty reasonable. Taurus are very reasonable. Even some of the Smith & Wessons, like the 642s or the 442s, or even some of the older Smith & Wessons, if you get them used. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you want to buy a used revolver and you don't know what to look for, find somebody that can advise you. But most of the time, used revolvers at gun shows or in gun shops don't cost much money.
Yeah, and you can test them and make sure that the cylinders work and all of that. And so it's I think in some ways less of an unknown than a semi-automatic. I mean, unless you've got the ability to test fire a pistol in a gun store with one of the, you know, the test barrels, the snails, they call them, and that's pretty rare to have that kind of thing. But, you know, you can make sure that the cylinder goes around and the trigger works and all of that. And so you can be a little bit more assured when you buy a used revolver that it's actually going to work. There's no, you know, extractor, or there's no recoil spring that may not be working, or there's not a magazine in the case of a semi-automatic pistol that maybe isn't working, and it's an obscure pistol, and replacement magazines are hard to find. I mean, those are some problems with buying new semi-automatics. I don't think if you buy the usual good brand names of semi-automatics, you're going to have those problems. I don't mean to imply that, but problems with handguns in general. And there's, I think, less of that with pistols, with revolvers.
Yeah. And you brought up something earlier, Glenn, that I think was a really good point. Well, actually, you just said it now. Excuse me. You don't have to mess with a magazine. You don't have to mess with a recoil spring. We all know both of those in a semi-automatic pistol, the recoil spring and the magazines, those are probably the most common problem areas in a semi-auto pistol, except for maybe ammo. But all that goes away with a revolver.
That's right. That's right. Easy to use. Not real quick to reload, but that's one of the downsides. Nothing could be perfect. But if you're talking about the single mom and person breaking through the front door, reloading is not, you know, let's say her, let's go with the story and go with that. That's not her highest priority. And so, yeah, I mean, you're going to get a ton of simplicity in exchange for a little bit of speed and reloadability, and ammunition capacity, obviously. But again, it's very limited purpose, a very specific purpose, and that's one of the primary reasons that these things are so inexpensive, is because of all these downsides we're talking about that are just tolerable. I mean, we all have to deal with it. We can't all walk around with, you know, belt-fed machine guns in our house. I mean, you know, it's just Maybe in Texas, you guys do that.
No. But I tell you what, though. I mean, I'd rather have a 5-shot revolver than nothing.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Glenn, there's another brand I want to talk about, or another revolver that, especially if someone is not a gun person, you said it best earlier. You said these could be good guns for people that are not gun people. A Ruger SP-101 is one that I highly recommend. The nice thing about those, you can shoot .357 Magnum or .38, but they got some bulk. They got some weight to them. And when you fire .38s out of a Ruger SP-101, it's very comfortable to shoot. So people who are recoil sensitive, they might like that gun because it's got some weight to it.
Yeah, I love SP-101s. I don't know what they cost, to be honest. I don't know if they're relatively inexpensive. They may be, but
I saw one used here at a gun shop in Texas. Someone used at a gun shop in Texas for $289, so that's not bad.
Wow, that's fantastic. Wow,
I should,
okay.
Yeah, I should have brought it. Huh?
I'm sorry, I might have to go and pick up an SP-101 or two.
I should have brought it home, but I didn't. But, you know, you were mentioning Charter Arms, too. Most people can find Charter Arms for under $300 new.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
Sorry.
Is it the Cadillac of revolvers? No, but, hey, it's something, you know?
Yeah, and new, of course, gets rid of potential problems about the thing not working, because while I don't know Charter Arms' customer service policy, I'm guessing that one of their revolvers didn't work, you would send it in and it would either be fixed or you would get a new one. So, I mean, you've got that going for you. And, yeah, $300 or so is not that much. I mean, that's roughly half of what a lot of the semi-automatics that we're talking about cost. And then you have to buy, I think, at least 10 magazines for any semi-automatic pistol you have. So, you know, there's a bit of an expense, too. And in some cases, XDs and, to an extent, Smith & Wesson M&Ps, those 10 magazines can be as much or more as the Charter Arms revolver. And it's in a common ammunition. Get a box. I mean, I buy ammunition in cases, you know, whenever I can.
Yeah, yeah.
But a box of 50 rounds of 38 will take care of most of the needs of that that single mom down the street, you know, and that's what it is. And, you know, it's a nice thing to be able to hand out. Here's a revolver in a box of 50 rounds, you know, regular old, just, you know, lead or, I don't know, just regular old range around or target rounds. Here you go. And, that's a pretty amazing gift and can save a bunch of lives.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I want to say something else earlier. You know, the revolvers like the Ruger SP-101s, they're kind of on the higher side of the price spectrum for revolvers, and we are talking about inexpensive revolvers. But, you know, like I said, I should have given that one brought that one home with me for $289 plus tax. But if you see a bargain like that, jump all over it. And if you see, you know, a used Smith & Wesson, or if you see a Charter Arms, or, you know, even like an H&R or something like that, jump on it. Glenn, what do you think? I mean, you and I are both preppers big time, so what do you think in a situation? I like what you talked about earlier. If there's a gun grab, hand them your revolver, right?
Yep. No, I think that could certainly happen. And and, you know, because, like I said, nobody's getting that Glock 17 of mine.
Yeah. The other thing about inexpensive revolvers is that, like you said, if there was some kind of a situation where, hey, you got to turn in a gun, and we're kind of going, you know, somewhat extreme, because I think people are going to be listening to this saying, hey, what are you guys talking about, right? The gun laws have actually been easing up a little bit in the United States, but hey, all it takes is a really major, major event like what's talked about in 299 days, and I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Right. No, I could see. I could see if there's widespread organized violence and it gets blamed on people that have "Don't Tread on Me" patches or bumper stickers or something. That could be a problem, and there could be a law in the books that is kind of being enforced that says turn in all your firearms. As I write about in the book, that doesn't mean that that's actually happening. And there's all kinds of corruption, and there are all sorts of exceptions for the right people. And people just basically, especially out in rural areas, just carry firearms anyway because these laws aren't really being enforced. So there's all that nuance to it. But yeah, it could be really, really handy to have some throwaway guns.
Yeah, especially if they come down on these weird people that wear this patch called the 17th Irregulars.
Oh yeah, they're pretty suspicious characters.
Yeah, they must be. I mean, you got to watch out for them. They're suspicious, but we're joking about it, and maybe we shouldn't, because that could happen.
Yeah, it could happen. I certainly hope it doesn't, and you know, but I'm ready to extend. One can be ready, and I don't say that in any sort of, you know, cool guy chest thumping way. But that's what we're kind of getting ready for, in a sense. And if it doesn't happen, then, for example, I mentioned last weekend taking those three teenage boys out shooting. Then, if it doesn't happen, the bad stuff doesn't happen. I have plenty of guns and ammunition to go have fun with some cool kids and show them, you know, and be a good role model, at least for a couple hours, right? And show them safety and all that, and put them, and now they're not afraid to shoot and all that. So there are tons of what I call peacetime advantages to being prepared, and especially when it comes to firearms.
Yeah. Last question. What do you think of this? The last ammo scare that we had, the last ammo and gun scare shortly after Sandy Hook, I don't know about you, but here in Texas, when I would go ammo hunting, I saw a lot of weird stuff, like 32 caliber for revolvers and things like that. If someone's going to pick up an inexpensive revolver, what do you think about getting one of those weird calibers instead of like a 38 special, something more obscure that might be more easy to find if ammo goes scarce?
Yeah, and I thought about that. I think my plan A would be a 38 special, or I guess plan B would be a 22, so maybe plan C, but still in the ballpark would be 32 H&R. Now I'm getting into obscure calibers I haven't thought about. You know, 32, I think, like, I want to say Smith & Wesson or 32 Short or something like that. And with the 32s, I know with the 32, the 327 Magnums, they fit, I don't know, four different calibers, you know, that are shorter cases than the 327 Magnum.
Yeah.
So there are all kinds of 32s out there. And yeah, if you know you can get ammunition, especially if you're at a gun store and you see the 32 revolver and you see several boxes of the ammunition it takes, heck yeah, do it. There's a description in book six off the top of my head. Book three or four, about 357 SIG and how it was available. And one of the characters, luckily, because he does it in real life, had a converting barrel for a Glock, and the 40 caliber magazines worked for the 357 SIG cartridges with the new barrel. And so an oddball caliber can save the day. And so, yeah, that's a perfect use for it. And if it's an oddball caliber, it's probably not going to be fetching as high of a price as something like a 38 Special. So you might be able to get two of those and, you know, several boxes of that obscure ammo. Just mentally think, though, plan on not ever being able to get, you know, that obscure ammo again. But if you have a couple boxes of it and it's the single mom down the street, you probably don't need pallets of that stuff.
No, well, and let me give an example, Glenn. 327 Federal Magnum is what I was talking about. That's kind of what I was referring to, although there have been revolvers in 32 H&R Magnum. But during the last ammo scare, I couldn't find 9mm, couldn't find 40, couldn't find 45, couldn't even find 357 SIG, but there was two or three stores here in the San Antonio area had 327 Magnum. Now, probably the reason they had it is because it'd probably been sitting there for a long time, and during the ammo rush, there probably weren't very many customers coming in looking for 327 Magnum. So maybe having an inexpensive revolver, if you can find one in a cartridge like that, maybe that might not be such a bad idea, and it's a decent cartridge that has a reasonable amount of decent stopping power.
Yeah, that's right. I almost got... I want to say a Ruger SP-101 in 327 Federal Magnum.
Yeah, they make them, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good-looking gun, and it had some impressive ballistics behind it, and it would have been a for-real gun. And, as I say, I think it was four different calibers would work in there, and some of them were really obscure and probably haven't been made in 100 years, but you never know what you'll find out there. So, think outside the box. You know, it's not all 940 and 45 out there. There are indeed other calibers and other uses, and you know, don't be a gun snob and say, my goodness, that brand or that's a revolver, what use could I possibly have for it? Well, I think plenty of uses, and if you've got the money and there's a good deal and there's some ammunition to go with it, pick it up, because it could be the find of a lifetime for somebody, you know, that's the recipient of it.
Yeah. One final thing I'll say. I think Smith & Wesson is making six-shot 327 revolvers. I'm fairly sure about that. So, you know, if five's not enough. But like you said, think outside the box. If you're going to pick up one of these guns in an obscure caliber, I like your idea. At least get three or four boxes of ammo. That's a couple hundred rounds. That's 150 to 200 rounds. For people who are not gun people, who are not going to train a lot, you know, if you're going to get a gun like that, have the boxes of ammo to go with it right away. But, you know, like I said, there was plenty of it available here like about February of last year.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean of this year, 2013, February of this year.
Yeah, you know what? I think I might have to go pick up a revolver.
Did I just cost you some money, Glenn?
You just cost me some money, doggone it.
Well, you know, the interview you and I did a few weeks back on AR pistols, you know, you might have cost me some money talking about those things.
Good. Everyone should have an AR pistol. They're wonderful things.
Well, this is payback. Go get a 327 revolver.
Hey, what, if I caused you to incur the expense of an AR pistol and you caused me to incur the expense of a $150 revolver, I think I got the better of that.
Yeah, you got a lot better. You got a lot better deal than I did. Well, Glenn, thanks. Take a real quick minute. I want to wrap this up soon, but take a minute to talk about Book 7.
Oh, sure. It's Book 7 of 10, the 299-day series. The title is 299 Days, The Change of Seasons. That's Book 7, The Change of Seasons. be out in mid-December. Do not have a precise date. The very last pieces of it are being put together and made magnificent, and it'll be great. And, so that's that. Amazon's the best place to get it. The website is 299days.com. I'm a big fan of Facebook. The Facebook page is 299days, parentheses, the book. And you can keep up with all that's going on in the 299 Nation.
Great. Glenn Tate, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Bob. Thanks again.
Have a good one.
You too.
Well, many thanks to Glenn Tate. Thanks, as usual, Glenn, for donating your time. Folks, don't forget, these guests donate their time. So if you get something, if you like what you hear, support them. Support the work I do bringing these folks on. Don't forget about the Shooters Club podcast or my Amazon store and things like that. Ways that you can kind of give back to my show and enhance your learning experience so I can keep bringing these good shows and these good guests to you. I want to finish off by saying, a lot of folks have thought that maybe I didn't like revolvers and that I don't like revolvers. Quite the contrary. The one thing I will say that I'll slightly disagree with Glenn on, though, is the concept of giving a revolver to someone who's not a real good shooter or not a gun person. Well, I tell you what, I've shot a lot of small revolvers, especially the snub nose. Now, with a full-size revolver, different story. If it's a full-size revolver, a big 4-inch or 5-inch or 6-inch revolver, something like that, hey, those are great shooters. Those might be good guns for a new shooter or someone who's not a gun person. But the little snubbies, especially the little lightweight snub-nose revolvers, those things are not pleasant to shoot. They're rather difficult to be accurate with. They've got very long, hard trigger pulls that are really kind of unpleasant, and they make a lot of noise and stuff like that. So you really got to train with them. And someone who's not really a gun person might not eventually like that the first time that they actually go to the range and shoot it. And here's the thing. If somebody doesn't like a gun, how often are they going to practice with it? Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever given a gun to somebody and they shot it and go, ugh, I don't like this. Here, take this back. Maybe you've purchased a gun for a significant other, for example, and he or she just didn't like that gun. How effective do you think they're going to be with that if they are afraid of it or don't like it or it's unpleasant? So think about that. But inexpensive revolvers can be a really cool item to add to your arsenal if that's what you're inclined to do. So I wanted to put this show out there because it was a topic that Glenn suggested. I'll give him credit. It was his idea. He suggested it. So, hey, I wanted to do it. Don't forget about the Suarez class I'm teaching in April. Close range gunfighting level 2. Now, Suarez has made some changes. That class is going to include a lot of point shooting in it. So if some of you have been wanting to take a point shooting class, point shooting progressions is actually officially discontinued. That's no longer part of Suarez International's curriculum. What they've done is they've combined all of their former classes into a smaller set of classes. And I will be teaching close range gunfighting level 2. So even those of you out there who have already taken close range gunfighting, this would be a really good one for you to come to because it's kind of like the next evolution. We added some new material. Suarez International did a great job. Gabe Suarez did a great job of adding some material to it and taking some of the point shooting material that was recently taught in the past, which I've taken, by the way, point shooting progressions. So I'll be incorporating that into close range gunfighting level 2, April 5th and 6th, April 5 and 6, 2014. Start planning now. If you want to get yourself a Christmas gift, you can get $100 off the class if you sign up before the end of 2013. Again, in the show notes, I'll put a registration link. Well, with all that said, folks, I think this is a great way to sign off right now. I'm Bob Main. Thanks for listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight. Catch you next week. Goodbye.